am blowing bubbles. La ta 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 ta. All set, King. I'll set out their crowd. Let's go. Yes, indeed. I have to do a very serious show here. Very serious program tonight. I think we'll take up international relationships, shall we, tonight, Tony? I think that's good. By the way, speaking of international relationships, I was just listening to the news, and I was listening to all of Khrushchev's comments about the Chinese communists, you know, all the Chinese communist comments about Khrushchev. Wouldn't it be a fantastic piece of irony if in the next 5 years, Russia and China get to be fantastic, gigantic adversaries, you know, every 5 minutes threatening to blow up the other one, and in so doing, they completely forget us and the rest of the world, and we become a neutral. And not only a neutral, but the kind of neutral that is insignificant. You know, like the way a couple of years ago France was, you know, Russia and America were young. Whoever worried about what France thought, you know, they'd say once in a while, hey, love is a ball. And once in a while they'd say something, but nobody listened. You know, they'd send Poirier over here and some bad French movies, which the New Yorker would go ape over. And that's about all they ever did, you know. You know, speaking of people going ape over foreign movies, I know one guy who got on a boat just 10 days ago. He's a solid 100% American type from Canton, Ohio. And he got on a boat just 10 days ago to become an English actor. And he'll be he's already got his new English name picked out. They've already provided him with his background, the schools he went to, the repertory companies. He played with that friend. Oh, let's go. We don't want any more of that. This is a serious radio station. We take up very serious concerns. Somebody said that the WOR is the last bastion of true 19th century thought. And, and you know, it's somehow there's a more than a modicum of truth in it. And at the same time, it kind of gives you a comfort that somebody is not only, you know, all up and down the Third Avenue where they're preserving the Tiffany lampshades and all the Victorian furniture, that at least there's one big organization that's also preserving 19th century ideas. You know, you know, we take them out and set them up here in the old Victorian chair. You know, nothing is more spooky, though, than 19th century thought in a super 20th century set of surroundings. It's yes. It's like some politicians I know. I know one politician that has a seeing eye. He has one of these electronic eyes, raises his flag every morning. The sun hits it, and up goes the flag, and the sun goes down goes the flag. And in between that, he has a few 19th century slogans, which he hurls out. Gigantic stereos. Hey, Georgie. Somebody wrote to me and says, what do you think of This Is the Week That Was? Or is it That Is the Week That Was? I saw it once, and I had a feeling of a whole bunch of little kids going, yeah, you're not so smart. You're not so smart, yeah. Da, 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 da. A few people seem to know the difference between satire and griping. There is a world of difference. And, yes, sir, that's my baby. And, of course, when satire becomes a tick, when you know, griping about the way things are just becomes a bit, a tick, and then it ceases to have any, yeah, Yes, sir, that's my... That's a good opening of a song. Yeah, yeah, you're not so smart, yeah. It's a great thing there. I'll get myself up. Oh, come on. Come on now. I don't ask for any laughs. I'm just trying to eke out a meager living here. Don't want any laughs. You know, speaking of eking out a meager living and our brothers across the sea, somebody here sent me a note. It came out of the newspaper. It says, San Francisco AP Alan C. Finley explained that when he saw those big goofy cream top pies, he just couldn't resist. What Finley did, police said, was fling two of the pies in the face of delivery man Leland E. Baum as Baum unloaded the pies from his truck. Finley promptly clapped in irons on a battery charge, said Baum, and we quote, "He's got no sense of humor." Now together now, gang, let's go. One, two, three, da, da, da. Holy smokes! Holy smokes! We're being invaded! Good Lord! Good, great Scott! Great Scott! It's the entire John Gambling Library marching right through the studio! All right, gang! Good old 19th century reasoning here is still there. Boy, it's got a lot of people. Tag a couple of nerve endings, huh? Well, while we're tagging nerve endings, he said, will you please put up my, would you please dig out, hey, come on, watch. Please dig out of my vast file there, Narcissus, please. We will need that. It's one of the last cuts on the side. It's very easy to find. It's just last cut there. Narcissus. And, I'm going to salute all the important people here tonight. You know, more and more our world is becoming hung on becoming important. There was a day back in the 1930s, I guess, from what I read, when America made a big deal about, you know, being democratic, the little man. It talked about the common man, the man on the street and all that jazz, you know, and made him a big deal. Have you ever seen those John Garfield movies? When John Garfield is standing on a roof and he says, "Lola, oh Lola, look at them pigeons fly. They're my dreams and hopes flying higher and higher. That's why I grow pigeons, Mulla." You remember those great movies that you see on the late TV shows there? And Pat O'Brien is always an oil worker. He looks great as an oil worker. He really convinces me as an oil worker. He walks around, yeah, with that funny tin hat on. Well, now, of course, it's quite the opposite. That the person who is admired and not only admired, but completely given the adulation treatment is the man who rides first class in the airlines today. Everyone wants to be an aristocrat. That's true, you know. This is supposed to be in the middle of the proletarian something. Everyone secretly wants to be an aristocrat. Did you see the great ads here recently for one of the airlines? I think it was American Airlines. It says, why? It says, no wonder the Russians restored the officer class. They tried to do away with the officer class. Didn't work out. And that's why there is a first-class flight on the airline. You know, once you've gotten that commission, Dad, you do not want to ride back there with the corporals. I can tell you this. And it's becoming more and more a big deal in this country. And somebody sent me a great ad. What's happening, of course, in college is that you find a great movement among many college students, both on the left and on the far, fantastic far right. I mean, so far right, where they want to see some kind of a monarchy put in. And, of course, they would be couturiers. They would be part of the court, naturally. They, if not the monarch themselves, they would at least be a duke or a lord. I know a lot of people in this country who would like to see some kind of a monarchy in, yeah. Can't you imagine the Duke of Hackensack? Yes. Oh, wouldn't that be great? I know half a dozen guys in that neighborhood that would like to take that job, the Duke of Hackensack. And there would be the Barony of Ohio. That would be pretty good, you know. I kind of like that one. I like the Earl of Ashtabula, who has arrived in town. Why? Or can you imagine what the columnists would go ape over that? They just love it. If we had real royalty, you know. And instead of a president, we had a real king. A genuine king. And, of course, he would have to have, he'd have to have the trappings. Americans go for the trappings. And, then there would be an aristocracy established. Now, it's very hard to tell. It has to be more than money now. Because what's making so many people mad about money is that so many people have got it these days. It's really losing all of its meaning. It's ridiculous. And so, of course, today, as you get higher in the aristocratic realms, you do away with money entirely. I know some rich guys who haven't had money in their pocket for 50 years. You know, they don't mess with. That's for the man on the street. And the rising tide of, all right, now bring it in there quietly there. Here's something that'll... And for all of you aristocrats tonight, we have special news and a special advertisement from one of the Scholastic magazines that's had a triumph of the jeweler's art. Your badge, a triumph of skilled and highly trained Balfour craftsmen, is a steadfast and dynamic symbol in a changing world. Wear your fraternity pin with pride as it reflects the rich traditions of your fraternity life. On campus and off, fraternity insignia today has a powerful new appeal. Oh, yes. Always smart, always in good taste, a stalwart buoy of tradition in the swirling tide of change. Oh, I kind of like that last line. Just bring that in there, Tony. That last line is too good to miss there. This is an ad for pearl-studded fraternity pins. Always smart, always in good taste, a stalwart buoy of tradition in the swirling tide of change. That means they're a little worried down at the Sig Elf house, I'll tell you. Swirling tide of change. I'll bet many a guy is going to go down, rumbling down the street in the tumbril, wearing his Deke pin. Speaking of swirling tide of change, this is WOR, AM and FM, New York. And we'll be here for a while. You have any little whoopies in there for us? Nothing in there? Oh, we've got a few. These are freebie whoopies. Here's one. The 92nd Street Y has stimulated summer plans for the young boy or girl who will stay home this summer. Now, what do they mean, stimulated summer plans? Well, I'd suggest you go to the 92nd Street Y and find out. Here's one here about mental health. Something, right to health. No, that's just plain ordinary health. They want you to write for a booklet on how to stop drinking iodine and things like that. It's, you know, little things around the house, just cleaning fluids, bleaches, insecticides. And you can get a special booklet on what not to drink around the house and things. It's send it to Health, New York 13. And you can become a home safety monitor. Kind of like that. Whip out your badge when you see Mabel and they're trying to drink the iodine. I'm a home safety monitor and I'm telling you to stop. You have an ID card, you know. Yes, tags and labels are very important to us today, even in that department. You ever tried to prevent somebody from drinking iodine? When I was a kid, you know, there was always talk about somebody, some lady in the neighborhood who threatened to drink iodine. That was a very popular mode of doing away with oneself at the time. Did you ever hear about that? They said she's going to drink iodine. And once in a while, when I would open up the medicine cabinet, and I'd see that little bottle up there with the skull and crossbones. And I never entertained any thoughts. No, I didn't. I would just look at it, and it would seem like, you know, somehow there was a mysterious world that really was true, and really mysterious. Speaking of mysterious worlds, the story of this guy hitting the other guy with the pie, which we read a couple of minutes ago, have you ever seen anything that is truly out of a classic comedy? You know, there are a whole bunch of things that we accept as comedy in our world, and people even write them into plays and things. And I wonder how often these things really occur. Like, I've been going to baseball games for 150 years, and I have never heard anybody once, not even once, holler, "Kill the umpire!" Have you ever heard anybody say that? Not once. I don't think Mel Allen has even heard anybody. He's been out there for 5 million years. He must have seen all the ball games in the last 50 years. And you don't hear that. It's only in cartoonists that you hear guys hollering, "Kill the umpire." And how about hitting people in the face with pies? I have never seen anyone get hit in the face. And yet, every time a pie shows up on the screen, you have the feeling, any minute now, in the kisser, somebody's going to get it. Have you ever actually seen a guy slip on a banana peel? You really have seen a guy slip on a banana peel. Oh, that's a great thought. You mean he walked down the street, there was a banana peel, and down he went? On a banana peel. Stepped off the curbstone onto a banana peel, fractured his skull, and was in the hospital for 4 years. It was a real boff over there in the neighborhood, wasn't it? Well, you know, speaking of that, I can only recall two or three occasions in my life that I really saw incidents that were right out of that nutty, goofy world of the slapstick comedy. And both of them occurred and involved foodstuffs. Have you noticed almost all comedy involves food? Banana peel, cream pies and all that stuff, seltzer bottles you squirt and all that. And it's all part of the food world. Almost all really classical slapstick involves somehow. Do you remember a great movie when Laurel and Hardy were aboard a boat, some kind of a nutty boat? And there was a tough guy who somehow had kidnapped them or something, and he was threatening him with a gun, and he said he wanted something to eat, and they had nothing to eat on the boat, and so Laurel and Hardy started to make food out of absolutely nutty stuff, like he took a sponge, and he put ketchup on it and fried it, and he gave it to him and said there were meatballs. Do you remember that one? He took a mop, and you know, one of these long mops with the long strings, the long yarn-like strings. He cut them off, and he swirled them around and put ketchup on it, and he told him that was spaghetti and meatballs he was serving. And you remember the guy sitting there, and he takes a taste. He says, "Very good meatballs." And Laurel and Hardy said, you know, they're squeaking, and Laurel and Hardy is flicking his tongue. And with that, he turns to him and he says, "In fact, they're so good that I think you two should have a good big meal with me. Here, I'll wait till you're through." And he sat there while they ate the sponges and all that junk and the shoe polish and everything. Well, almost all slapstick comedy somehow has to do with food. It always involves it. And I've seen two great occasions that I happened to be present when I really saw it happen. I saw a guy one day, and it was a hot, stinky, rotten, crummy summer day. The sun is beating down on her, 87 million cars in a line, you know, one of those big traffic jams. And right by the side of the road, and this was in northern Indiana where, boy, it gets hot, was a frozen custard stand. You know, the kind of places where he has the machine and he draws the frozen custard, like Carvel or whatever, the Dutch Maid or Carmel or whatever they call these places. And he is making these cones. There was a guy there, and it was a girl working, and they're making cones. And there's about 9 million people stopping in their cars to get out, and the kids are crying, and they're making the vanilla and the strawberry cones. And boy, was it rotten and hot. And he's trying to make change. He's trying to make ice cream at the same time. Well, I was in line. I'll tell you exactly what happened. I'm in line. I'm out with a chick. We're in the car. We stop, you know, she says, "Oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a frozen custard cone?" So, all right, so I stop, I get in, I get out, and I stand in line, everybody's waiting there, and this guy, and the people are muttering, "Ah, come on, oh, what a wait, oh boy, wow." They're yelling about waiting, and they're, you know, there's just a general feeling of anarchy is in the air. It's just growing and growing, and you could see this guy has now been on since about 7 in the morning. It is now about 7:30 at night. He's sweating. The machine is red hot in there, and he's turning out frozen custard. Can you imagine how a guy must think of frozen custard after eating that out all summer? Ugh, boy. And then he's pulling these things out. Some of them even look obscene. You know, he just pulls it. You go, it comes out, blip, on the cone, blip, and he gives another one out. And it's just all day long, and they're yelling and griping at him and just constant screaming. And there's a kid, "Man, no, I didn't say strawberry, I want that." The kid, you know, has got a strawberry. He said strawberry, you know. "There was a chocolate." "All right, give me the strawberry cone." He reaches out. He's, "Okay, chocolate, chocolate." Another one he has. So it's going like that, and I'm moving up about a quarter of a millimeter a minute. And we finally get almost to the front. Now, there's about three guys ahead of me, and some big fat slob of a Babbitt gets up there. And he starts yelling at this guy about waiting. He says, "Why, what is this waiting all the time? For crying out loud, you think you're, aren't you in business, Mac? Now, come on." He says, I want two vanillas, I want three pineapples, I want a cherry whip, I want a strawberry marble, and I want two chocolate whipped nuts. And I also want one of the banana splits. Now, come on." And he's a real slob. He's standing. So the poor guy's, he's making these things. And so he starts handing to him. And the guy's got a great big cardboard thing with him in his hand. You know, the holes he's putting them in. And he says, "Oh, they're melting already. What do you mean? What am I supposed to do? Waiting here in the sun, they're melting all the time. Now, come on." And then he whips out a $20 bill. And he says, give me the change. That guy says, oh, you know, turns around. And then without any warning, the poor guy turns around to the cash register with a $20 bill. The guy starts saying, oh, he says, look at this, look at this. He turns to the crowd, you know, the crowd behind him. Have you ever noticed this kind of customer that appeals to the crowd? He says, look at this, look at this. I've been waiting in line 15 minutes. And what does the guy give me? He says, gives me one chocolate nut. I asked for two. One, two. Look at this. For crying out loud, gives me a pineapple. And with that, he turns around. The guy is giving him his change, and boy, this big fat slob is just a nasty rotten. He's going, ah, ah. With that, the guy reaches over and just reaches out of the window. He grabs the chocolate nut, and he says, here's a chocolate nut for you, right in the, plop, right in the nose. He just, like that, you know, it's a big soft stuff, and the nuts are flying, and the cherry, plop, right in the nose, and his eyeballs are sticking up. There was a stunned silence in the crowd. And, of course, everybody in the crowd is for the guy, you know, and actually getting the thing in the nose. He deserved it. You know, everybody in the crowd is applauding. He goes, and he sticks it again like that. He pushes it down. And with that, he pulls the window down. Pow! And there he is in his little glass cage. Well, I saw that scene, you know, and everybody sort of mills around. And the guy is really bugged, you know. The trouble with real life is that they don't cut. You know, if it was a Jerry Lewis picture, they'd cut just as the guy gets it in the nose. They don't show the guy running around the place trying to get into the glass cage to get at the guy. Which he did. He ran around yelling with the cone sticking off his nose. You know, it's a wild moment. And of course, we were all applauding. And the chick is sitting in my car, and she's looking out, and she's looking out, and she sees me. You know, I'm cheering it on. I'm really right in the whole scene there. The guy keeps running past me with the cone dripping all over the place, and she says, "What happened?" I says, "Oh man, I can't tell you." Well, I'll tell you though another one that I saw that I think that was every bit as good, it had different overtones. It was very spectacular. It was not the overtones of anger. It was just a pure piece of ideal slapstick, just genuine slapstick. There was an ice cream place again. This was called the Igloo. And it was a place that everybody went to. It was across the street from the high school, and everybody, you know, it was a big deal. And every noon, especially when the weather was hot and stinky and everything, everybody would take his 12 cents or whatever it is he saved up, or his 17 cents to go over and get a triple cone, you know, or get a big, fat, thick malt. And they had a long counter. They had a counter that must have sat about... oh, maybe 30 or 40 people, a bunch of booths in back, but it was a big stand-up eat place that had nothing but ice cream. Nothing. It was the biggest ice cream deal in the world. And they had about five high school girls working around back there with the green uniforms, and it's all, they had 115 different flavors, you know, that kind of place. Very jazzy place. And so everybody in high school would go there. It was a big deal to go there at the Igloos and get yourself a triple rich malt. And oh boy, they were like with spoon homage and that kind of stuff. And so one very hot spring day, I am standing in the back waiting my turn. You know, you wait for it to get waited on. I'm sort of back by the window. And they're all up there in the front. And the girl is, they had like a little assembly line, you know, where the one girl would say, banana split, Gertie, banana split, the one hot chocolate with vanilla ice cream, and two double frappes, strawberry, you know, that kind of thing. And there would be a girl making them. So this girl is hunched down making these things. And everybody is sitting there at the counter. They're all sitting. This is like a long row. I remember this to my dying day, such a scene. They were all sitting there, and some were eating. Others were waiting. There were some old ladies there. There were a couple of big, fat truck drivers sitting there. And there were like a half a dozen clean-limbed high school youths. There was a tall, thin guy who looked like a minister. You know, it's a big, it's right in the middle of town. So they're all sitting there, and the stuff is being served. And with that, the girl reaches down into the ice cream thing. She's got about five big banana splits all laid out there, you see. And she reaches down, and she takes out this great big chromium silver whipped cream dispenser. A big thing, you know, it looked like it's like a bomb. And this was before they used the little cans, and it's a big bomb like that. And it had one of these CO2 tops, you know, and it squirts the whipped cream, and she goes, she's going like that. She goes, you know, and everybody is watching. You know, that's a very fascinating thing to watch. You know, she makes the little swirl. And all of a sudden it goes, boom! The top flies right off. And I, for one split second, everything was white, just like a gigantic snowstorm. It was white. You could just see everything white. And there they were all sitting. Everyone was stunned, and everyone was frosted from just their face, everything. They're all sitting there. Their eyebrows are white, you know, the guys with on the end of their nose, and their ears got big globs, and they're all sitting there for one instant, that one brief, fantastic instant. And the girl, I'll tell you, the girl was fantastic. You know, when you see pictures of people getting a shampoo, this girl's face, it looked like you could just see the little tip of her nose sticking out of a snowdrift. You know, just poop. She got a, nobody, they're all sat there for one brief instant, and it was a silence in the place. Just like that. You know, and everybody first thinks he's the one that's got it, you know. He sits there, and they turn around and they look, and they can see the whole place is just coated with a nice coating of whipped cream. Just for guys, you can see the blue eyes, and the guy's eyes, ears sticking out of the cream, and old lady, they're going like that. And the guy, with that, somebody started to laugh, and within 30 seconds, the whole joint is roaring. They're just roaring. The only time I've ever seen a true, fantastic moment of slapstick. Well, I'll tell you another time. I saw one other thing. I think I told this story on the air, but I just got to tell this. This is engraved in my mind. I am standing on the corner. I'm just a little kid, and I'm waiting at the corner of a intersection, big street there, and on the corner of the street there was what appeared to be and had been always known as the Bluebird Pool Room. It was a pool room, you know, sort of blue, and guys would hang around and play with pinball machines and that on the corner, and they sold knee-high pop, and it'll sign the windows of Coca-Cola. And you know, all those crummy old fly-spec signs at these places used to have a Copenhagen snuff. You can hardly see in them, you know. There's the pause that refreshes and all that, and a very cruddy-looking joint. Had a garage back of it, and all around it was kind of a gravel driveway. Went all the way around. It was just like on a, just sitting there on the corner was. You can imagine the place, and there's a driveway all around. Not even a driveway, like a big parking lot all the way around. It was all by itself. And across the street from there was a big drugstore, and on the other side was an old house, and four stoplights. You got the scene? Well, I'm standing there waiting for the light. I'm a kid, you know, I'm going to the store or something. And a car comes pulling up, and the car, he stops at the light. There he is, you see. Well, with that, as he's sitting there in his car, he just minding his own business, suddenly up behind him, and I saw it coming, up behind him comes a squad car. And these two cops were sitting in the squad car, and apparently they're jabbering, you know, they're blah, blah, blah. You know, you remember those old cartoons and those old movies that you see once in a while that involve the insane stuff with the cars? You know, when the guys are riding around the streetcars and all that stuff? Well, you never really see that in life. Let me tell you what I saw in life. Here they are, you know, this guy's sitting in his front seat looking very proper. I'm sitting right there, I'm standing 10 feet from the guy. When the squad car comes up behind, and there are two cops in the squad car, see, and they're jabbering away, and without any warning, pow, they hit this guy in the back end, see? It goes boom, like that. With that, his car goes zhunk, it flies forward, see? And he sits there for a second, you can see he's sort of stunned. He turns and he looks around, and these cops, oh my, they're all embarrassed, see? So they get out of their squad car, and they sort of stand around there and look at him, and he is yelling. He says, ah, blah, 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 blah. And with that, he runs around the front of his car, and apparently what he was really mad about was that it killed his motor. It did not cause any action in the back end. Didn't bash in. It just boom, like it, and all of a sudden, oop, and he killed his motor. So with that, he runs around the front. I'm still standing there. I'm a kid. The light has not changed yet, you see. And these two Keystone cops are sort of standing around looking dumb. And he runs around the front and grabs the crank. There was a crank in the car. Now, this is the makings of true slapstick. The guy goes, whoop, he jerks it, he's real mad, see, he jerks it, and it goes, blah, 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 and with that, it kicks him, it goes, whoop, his feet go right out from under him, and the son of a gun is vertical, he's in the middle of the air, he goes, blah, blah, blah. He flies over, and he flops on his back, and he gets up, and he's really bugged, but his car is now going, and it is in gear. With that, this old Chevy goes, and he's, whoa, 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 he's yelling like that, and the two cops are sort of standing there with a dumb look on their face. The car makes a left turn. It goes, and it goes right around the corner. And I'm, you know, I'm really astounded. I'm standing there watching this. I've seen this whole scene. It goes, and it goes right around the back of this pool room. It makes it's going in a circle, see, and it is circling the pool room on the gravel. And it goes, And the guy is running like mad after it. You see, it's a true. His hat is flying and his tie is, hey, my car! The car is going. Well, the cops start up their squad car. They figure they're going to catch it by the squad car. See, they go, boo! And they go, boo! Oh, hold on, we got to, boo! And they start after this old crummy car. Well, now you've got the scene. The Chevy is going around and around, and the squad car is chasing around and around, and the guy is behind all three of them. Now, the guy is running behind the squad car by now. Well, the car is making these loops, you see. It goes, and each succeeding loop is getting narrower. It is making a spiral, and it makes three solid loops. And what made it even funnier is that there is nobody else on the street. Just me, the two cops, and the guy chasing the Chevy. And this insane Chevy going around the pool room. It just goes, and it's making little loops. It's getting smaller and smaller. And you know, I'm watching this, and I'm completely dumbfounded. Well, it makes one final loop, and it's heading right at the back shed. There's a shed on the back of the pool room. It's heading right at the shed, the Chevy. Well, a Chevy goes, and this old Chevy boy is really going. I mean, it's going about 30 miles an hour, and it goes right at the shed. Boom! It hits the shed, right broadside. The cops go, oh! They stop, you know. And the instant it hit the shed, you heard inside the shed a kind of... You heard an explosion, some kind of funny noise, and instantly every door and every window of the pool room opens, and every last bum in town jumped out. The pool room was full of bums, and they came jumping out, and they ran like mad all over the, you know, they just like ants. They were running all over the place, and the garage was burning now. It's go boop. It turns out that they had a gigantic cache of illicit booze. And this crummy old Chevy had hit the jackpot, and it goes like that. And the guy is, my car. And the cops are running around. They don't know what to do. The two cops, you know, one gets his gun out and sort of looks around. He says, well, hey, stop. Oh, halt. He's hollering, halt. And you can hear from the distance somebody has pulled the alarm. And you hear, whoo, coming from the distance. And I hear these sirens coming out. And all the while I'm standing. And you know, kids, being a kid, kids have a very special frame of reference. What happened was, this all occurred within about a minute and a half. Not more than that. It just took all a minute. The whole scene, it was just like on a movie. And you can hear the squad car, and you hear the bums running through the woods, and the guy's yelling and hollering, and there's the smoke coming out of the joint, and you could smell the liquor and the booze. And guys who hadn't been out of the pool room in 20 years are running around. You know, you could see their white faces running with their pool cues and stuff. And this old car is standing. Well, I like a kid, you know, I think, oh, well, I got to go to the store now. I got to go to the store. And so the light changes, and I continue to the store. And they hear the siren, woo, and the firemen are coming, and 5 minutes later, they're out there squirting this joint, and the car is dragged out, and there's about 100,000 gallons of booze they discover, and the pool room has been raided, and this guy is laying on the street. You know, the cops are sort of standing. They caused the whole scene, you know. And I think the final kicker of it all was when the report came out in the newspapers. It was great. The report did not say anything about the way it started. It just said a large cache of illicit whiskey was discovered through the detection methods of Professor Patrolman O'Malley and Patrolman Schmidt. Oh my, and I saw this whole scene, you know, I thought it was such a great moment, such a fantastic scene. And I got home, and I remember my mother saying, what's all the excitement down the corner? And I said, oh, there's an accident, Ma. And she said, an accident? And I said, yeah, there's an accident, Ma. And I started to tell her about it, you know, and a kid doesn't even think it's funny at first, you know. I says, well, Ma, you know, the guy's sitting in the car. And my mother started a roar, and she's, you know, she's splitting the gusset. You know, she's really busting her girdle, and she's yelling and hollering. And the whole neighborhood is down there. Oh, one other one. I'll have to tell you another one. One other great moment that had overtones of high comedy was we had a guy in the neighborhood named Selkie, Mr. Selkie. I think you heard me tell this story, but it was this bears retelling. It's one of those great, great classical moments. That everybody in the neighborhood used to make homemade root beer. It was a big deal to make homemade. Oh, don't you remember they make homemade root beer? And you could buy at the Woolworths, you could buy the bottling thing. You could bottle the bottles with the homemade root beer. And so that's what everybody said they were making. And Mr. Selke was famous for his homemade root beer. Well, we were out playing baseball one morning out on the street, and his house was about four or five doors down. And Selke was out of town on his vacation. Everybody in the neighborhood there would go for, they'd hitchhike or something. For a week, they would go to Michigan to fish or something. They would be gone. So Selke is not home. And the sun is beating down on the roof, and it's really coming down. Everything, you know, the neighborhood is a fantastic hot day. It's about 100 degrees. And we're out there playing ball. And suddenly, without any warning, boom! You just hear a sound like that. And everyone says, whoa, what's that? What's that? What's that? What's that? Boom! You hear another one. Anyway, the kids are running around. Hey, what's it's coming from Selke's house. What is that? Boom! You hear boom, boom! Boom! All of Selke's beer is going off at once. He has made the gross error of storing it in the attic, little realizing that the attic now is now like 9,000 degrees, and apparently his sealing methods were not too good. The yeast is about 40 times stronger than it should be, and the beer is going, boom, 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 and the boom. Four of them would go off at once. And there's always one sorehead in the neighborhood. I don't know what, I just don't know where this person comes from, but they're in every neighborhood. There's the cop caller. Every neighborhood has a cop caller. There's a certain person who, if the ball rolls on their lawn, calls the cops. You know this person? That person is in every neighborhood. Well, we had such a person, Mrs. Schneider. And the ball rolls on her lawn, you know, the cops. It's either that or she confiscates the ball. That kind of scene. They're lovely old people. And so immediately Mrs. Schneider pulls the whistle. And sure enough, down the street came the wagons and the boop! You hear the bloop! And everybody's mad in the neighborhood because, you know, you shouldn't have called them on Selke. And somebody must have got on the long distance wire that night and told Selke, don't come back from Michigan, Selke. As far as I know, Selke never came back to the neighborhood. You know, they were watching. They had a stakeout around his pad. Well, then, of course, you know, the business of... I myself, personally, once had a terrible thing happen to me that goes into the realm of high comedy. And this, and this is very embarrassing. I don't like to talk about this one even now at this point. But I have to. I'm going to tell you that it actually happened to me. I'm in this play. And it's a play that involves, I'm the devil, actually, you see, and I'm a very suave, slick devil, and, very smooth. I'm a kind of a Madison Avenue devil, you know. I'm kind of a combination of David Susskind and John Gambling. And, you know, I can sell anybody, plastic soap and they'll buy it, you know, and a real smooth, slick customer. And, every night we had this scene. It was a very dramatic scene where I would change Faust into, a young man, you see, very dramatic. Boom! It would go. And the lights would flicker and the smoke would fly. It was a great moment there. And I had a little thing. I would work it on the stage. I would touch a little button, you see, when I'd wave my hand. I'd make a gesture, just a real dramatic gesture, and the lights would flicker. And I would just reach over casually with my other hand and I would touch a button and that would release the little bomb, you see. And the bomb would go, boom! Oh, boy, you know what? It was great. Well, then I would be right on the apron of the stage, and both of us would be looking out at the audience. And he is looking into a mirror. Well, the mirror, of course, was just a frame. Actually, it was like the audience was looking out through the mirror at him. And I am standing over his shoulder, and I'm saying, well, how do you like it? It's interesting, isn't it? And I'm standing there behind him that night. I go, I reach over and I touch the button. It's black. See, the stage is black. It's dark. And I go, whatever the thing was, and the lights are going. And with that, I say, and now, boom, shoom, whoosh, and the music, and the lights come on, and there is this guy. He is now, he had just been 87 years old, and now he is a stripling. And it's a great moment in the play. And there always would be a gasp in the audience to go, oh, like that, look at it, it's fantastic. And I would say, and how do you like it? And the crowd, we hear a little mutter of applause. We knew how it worked. It just was a great moment. And so this night I go, boom, and I am standing behind him now at the mirror, and I hear the crowd, but instead, I hear this fantastic, evil giggle running through the crowd there. Except we're getting a laugh where we shouldn't get a laugh. This always worries you on the stage, by the way. You hear the, ha, 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 ha. They're laughing, and I say, how do you like it? Ha, ha, ha. And you hear this crowd, and I don't say. With that, the guy turns to me, and I don't know what made him do it. His second sight or something, this actor, he turns to me. He never did this at night, ever. He never turned to me before. He always looked right out at the audience, right through the mirror, see? And with that, he suddenly turns to me, and I give him this question. I say, how do you like it? He turns to me and says, your fly is open. I said, what? He said, yes. And then he turns to the audience, you know, and he's standing in front of me, and I'm saying, have a cadabra, and I, what am I going to do, you see? So I start going off stage, and it was a big scene, see? You know, so I start going off stage. I figured, well, he's going to feel for a second. I start going off stage, and with that, the other character, who was supposed to be my assistant, another devil, see, he comes flying out of the wings, which is what he was supposed to do. He comes flying, he says, hey, where are you going? Oh, you know, I want to kill him. What do you mean? He said, where are you going? I said, where do you think? And with that, the crowd, you know, what a devil. It's going downhill all the way, you know, and I rush off stage, and boy, was that fly open. So I come back on stage, and from that minute on, Goethe went right out the window. I mean, Goethe, Marlowe, the whole scene, you know, I just couldn't bring him back. And every line then had a double meaning, no matter what you said. You know, it was so terrible. We suddenly found ourselves in the middle of some kind of fantastic obscenity. Everything we said, these long speeches that would sound very serious the night before, I keep saying them, and people, oh, what great lines. They thought it was written in, you know. Oh, boy. Speaking of written in, we'll see you tomorrow night at the Limelight, gang, crowd. Bring your own false face. We'll be at the Limelight tomorrow night on Sheridan Square, 7th Avenue South, live. We'll blow our nose for you. We'll do the thing with the knuckles. I got a great thing that I play with the knuckles here. It's a terrific act. I will play Yes Sir, That's My Baby on a rubber band. I will do you some paper clip sculpture. Flip, flip, whoop, whoop. And, you know, we'll have a thing there. So help, 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 Chinese people, by God.
This is WOR Radio, your station.